This is One in a Billion with Mabel Chan, a show about China through the personal stories and voices of young entrepreneurs and other enterprising types. These are American-educated, globally-minded Chinese millennials making big, bold moves, crossing borders and cultures, looking to better themselves and benefit others. What moves them? What drives them? How do they want to improve themselves and impact the world? On this podcast, Mabel Chan talks with social entrepreneur and sophomore at Wellesley, Moja Shen, about her life-changing choice to leave China for America and her passion for entrepreneurship.
I think for me, it's always about growth and opportunities. I would pursue whatever way there is for me to grow more as a person.
It's kind of hard to wrap my brain around Moja Shen, how she sees what's possible for her, beginning when she was just a teenager in Hebei province in China. Her father has studied in Switzerland and became a hotel manager. Her mother is an accountant and used to help Moja with homework until 10 every night. They want their little girl to get top grades, get into a top school. That's the road to respect and success in China. Moja wants all of that and much more.
I don't want to just be like anyone else. I kind of want to be able to raise my voice a little more and make a real impact instead of just being one in millions.
But like million others, Moja spent 9 years in an army youth school.
I think my basic education taught me a lot about how to follow rules, how you cannot be different. You're going to be punished if you're different.
When Moja came to America for the first time in a student group tour,
I absolutely fell in love with the whole innovative environment.
2 years later, when she turned 16, she turned down a once-in-a-lifetime offer to be a student at Beijing University, a top school in China. She was selected to represent China, allowing her to attend a 2-year program at the United World College in New Mexico. Moja is 21 now, a sophomore at Wellesley, majoring in economics and taking entrepreneurial management and technology courses at MIT.
I want to explore more aspects of life and what I can actually make out of myself.
Since leaving China, Moja has started a Chinese language class, fundraised for orphans in China, and taught English at a migrant school in a poor area of Beijing. She also launched 2 social venture projects that represent her response to poverty, deprivation, and despair in China and Mexico. Her innovative ideas have won startup competitions on college campuses around America and seed funding from the Clinton Global Initiative and the Resolution Project, a nonprofit that sponsors social entrepreneurship for undergraduate students. Moja Shen, welcome to One in a Billion. 你好.
你好, it's so nice to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. The first question I want to ask you is about the way you describe yourself as a made-in-China robot turned creative human in your LinkedIn profile. I love your sense of humor. Where did you grow up? And what's robotic about how you were raised?
I was born and raised in a city called Qinhuangdao, which is 2 hours away east of Beijing. It is the beginning part of Great Wall, and it's right next to the sea. It's absolutely beautiful. It's a small city. I got very little exposure to the outside world. So basically, the education system sort of trained me into a robot that is very good at testing and, you know, just learning things and reciting. Yeah, basically, that's why I said about robotic person. And then coming abroad to the U.S. Gave me new perspectives.
So I read that Qinhuangdao, your hometown, has a nickname. It's the backyard of Beijing and Tianjin.
Right. Yes.
So it is a port city with about 3 million people and is perhaps most well-known for Beidaihe.
Yeah,
right?
Beidaihe.
And
yeah.
That's Beidaihe. It's the summer seaside resort for top Chinese officials. It's kind of like the Camp David for U.S. presidents.
My home is actually pretty close to Beidaihe. is absolutely astonishing. Really beautiful sea line, and you can see the sunrise there and a lot of wildlife as well. So basically my city has this, is a combination of, you know, historical side, because another part of my city is called Shanhaiguan, which is the beginning part of Great Wall. And then Beidaihe is sort of like the tourist attraction, absolutely beautiful because of the sea.
Do you miss your hometown?
Mostly I do miss my family. It's amazing being raised in a small city, actually, because you got to live with your family really close, and that kind of give you this environment where everyone is around you and supportive, nurture you since you're really young. So I think definitely I miss my family, and I miss the food. The seafood is absolutely amazing.
You studied at a youth army school when you were 7 years old for 9 years. Was it mandatory, or was that your choice? What was that experience like?
Whenever I say about it, people think it's, wow, so weird. Why do you go to youth army school, right? But it happens to be one of the best public schools in the city. And almost everyone go to public schools, especially I'm from a small city. Mm. We do some army training every semester. So basically you have like a week off and or more, and the whole class will stay together, and the soldiers train you how to stand still for an hour, how
for
to march.
For 1 hour? You were seven.
Yeah, actually, that kind of teach me to be a little more rigorous.
Rigorous, I guess, meaning strong.
Strong. Mm. And you also practiced a lot of leadership through that process, because I was always the one who lead the whole class, marching or like singing army songs. Whenever the teacher asks any person to volunteer to lead the class today or lead on the whole presentation in the end, I would always volunteer and raise my hand, raise my voice. That gave me a lot of opportunities into practicing my leadership skills.
So you want to stand out very young.
I think it's also the culture in China, I would say, because everyone is only child, you sort of want to stand out as one of this many students into showing who you are and how to be unique. So you would be a little more competitive on getting your opportunities. For example, when I was in high school, I was in the best, most competitive class. And then the first day that we were going to army training, and the teacher said, who wants to be the monitor for the boys and the monitor for the girls? I was on the last line. And then I just jumped up and raised my hand and saying me. And then, of course, everyone heard, and I became the monitor and throughout high school. And that gave me more leadership opportunities. So I became the president of the student union, etc. So I think you have to be very proactive into getting those opportunities.
Was there any regimen when you were in the youth army school that you still keep today?
Yeah, I learned a lot about time management skills, about like how do you plan your day out to reach
like
your goal.
Like what? You get up at 4 a.m?
Sometimes, yes. And also I think it's a lot about mentality, how much potential you have and how much you can stretch yourself. Because I guess having been through very difficult situations, I guess both physically and mentally, it sort of prepare you very well for the future.
吃苦.
吃苦, yeah.
吃苦 in Chinese, as we say, is about eating bitterness, right? Mm-hmm. That you can endure. The more you can endure, the more resilient you become, right?
Yeah, it's very important for only child, I think, because I think none of us really been through a lot.
That kind of environment, right? Very structured and regimented army, youth school training. How did that train you how to see yourself and your sort of purpose in life?
That experience gave me some insights that I don't want to just be one of them. Because I don't want to just be like anyone else. I kind of want to be able to raise my voice a little more and make a real impact instead of just being one in millions, you know. So that kind of pushed me a little more, reaching out of my city, out of China, into more opportunities.
But then when you were a student, especially in the youth army school, you were taught to obey.
Yeah, okay. interesting topic. I think I'm right the opposite at this moment. Totally. I think my basic education taught me a lot about how to follow rules, how you cannot be different. You're going to be punished if you're different, say in the exam, right? If you argue with your teacher, things like that. But right now, actually, I'm an entrepreneur right now. And the baseline of entrepreneurship is how to be innovative and how to break the rule. Mm-hmm. And it's cool to actually have the experience of obeying the rule, because you can never break the rule very well if you don't even know the rule, right?
Right.
So I think that helps. And right now, I kind of just learn to argue with the existing situations and try to be innovative.
So you then spent 2 years in the best high school in Hebei province. You were a very good student. You got recommended by your school to go to Beijing University. In the eyes of your classmates and teachers, your life was set to be successful, you said. Surprisingly, you hit a crossroad.
So what happened was I got this opportunity to attend United World College. I was interviewed by the Chinese National Committee, and I luckily to be selected to represent China. So that opportunity basically can send me to the US. At that moment, I was more than eager to kind of see the real world and get more opportunities, exposure, and just learn more. That was a turning point of my life.
What motivated you at that time in your life to search for opportunities beyond China?
Yeah, for me, it's always about growth and opportunities. I would pursue whatever way there is for me to grow more as a person. I can sort of see my future in Beijing University and what I can do after graduation. And being able to do that is not exciting anymore. So I totally want an undefined path that would give me more interesting things and see where life leads me.
So you said you didn't want a defined path in a normal life.
Yeah, I don't think I know myself very well, and I don't want to define myself at such a young age. I don't think it's fair, and I don't think it's something I should do. Instead, I want to explore more aspects of life and what I can actually make out of myself. Also, I was thinking about impact. I think that is one of my core value. Whatever I do, I want to be able to reach a bigger audience, impact more people positively, and impact my community, the world positively. Hmm. Yeah.
So you were already thinking that at that young age, 16 or so?
Yeah, I was sort of this youth with a big ambition since really young.
How did your parents react to all of this stuff that you're thinking in your head? Were you talking with them? Were they advising you?
I think I'm very lucky to have such open-minded parents. My dad actually studied in Switzerland when he was in his 20s. So he sort of had this global exposure as well. My mom she was supportive throughout the time. She wanted the best for me. What is the best for my growth? So they were a little scared at the beginning of, you know, taking so much risk as a young girl, right? But eventually they decided to support me into whatever I want to do.
That's fantastic. Now, so you chose to go to New Mexico and
yeah.
spend 2 years. What was that experience like, those 2 years?
It is definitely life-changing, and it came as a shock at the beginning. I mean, looking back at several cases, for example, the first time I went to a party, I mean, I've never been to a party before. It was crazy for me. One of the biggest things is I saw the personalities of people, how they show who they are, who they really are, and how to interact with them, with each other, right? I was so trained into such a box or like a defined way of thinking that I should just be like a bystander and not showing who I am. I also had a lot of instances where I encountered myself, you know, what I'm good at and what I'm not. For example, I still remember this case when we were the first several weeks of school, we were sitting in a circle discussing school rules, and everyone was, you know, talking about my opinion is blah, blah, blah. And I was just sitting there for the whole time, 2 hours, not being able to say anything because I realized that day that I have no opinion towards anything. I was sort of trained into this way of just nodding of what anyone else is saying and being their followers, right?
Well, language was also a problem, wasn't it?
It was. It was definitely the problem.
What did you do to overcome that?
I started talking to a lot of people, kind of train my verbal English, and I started reading a lot more and foreign perspectives. We did a lot of leadership training as well. That really just pushed me. It pushed me out of my comfort zone.
Mojia would keep pushing boundaries and testing her abilities to move others to join her in making a difference in the world. More on that after the break. When you were 19, you founded a social impact project called Revive.
Yeah.
Is the first program of its kind in China for parents who've lost their only child. For our listeners who may not know much about China's one-child policy before it ended earlier this year, it was introduced more than 30 years ago as a family planning, population control policy that's created many problems. One perhaps lesser known is suicides by parents who have lost their only child. Now, there are around 1 million families in China that have buried their only child last year. And you, Mojia, you have two only child cousins who died as teenagers. How did that affect you and your family?
When I was 8, one of my actually close friend, a cousin, committed suicide on the day of Mid-Autumn Festival. And nobody could believe what happened, and everyone was in shock. The whole family didn't even know how to interact with the parents who, you know, my aunt and uncles who lost their child.
How old was the child?
The child was my age, around 8, just basically in primary school. And then several years later, my other cousin who just turned 20 died on his birthday when he's going out partying and died in a car accident. And when the second case happened, I started looking more at this issue because there just can't be two, right? And I definitely feel personally connected with the issue. When I did more research, I realized how many people are out there who are suffering from this. And people are in deep depression. They are committing suicide every day, the parents, going through this. And I realized someone have to do something to help them, right? Realizing that we as outsiders cannot help them because we didn't go through what they went through, I realized, you know, setting up a support group for them to help each other is probably the best way.
How did you even come up with that idea? I mean, that was not done before. You were the pioneer.
So basically, at that time, I found out about Clinton Global Initiative, which is a conference that brings together the brightest university students around the world together for social innovation and change. So I was able to get a lot of mentorship out of that conference. And I went through a competition called the Resolution Project, where I became a fellow there and got initial funding as well as mentorship. So with that much support, I went home. I found this group who was active maybe on a monthly basis of 20 people meeting each other and sort of just, you know, chat and help each other. I was able to actually work with them to officially establish the organization in the government to get official support. And we were able to grow this organization to be more than 80 members right now.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
This is mind-blowing. What did you do? You showed up one day, knock on the door of the local government. Hi, I'm here. Let's start this group together.
So basically, I reached out to community leaders first, and they referred me to those parents in the community. And I reached out to one person. And then from him, he basically told me the contact of this small group. And I, you know, I talked to the leaders and we decided to actually formalize this organization. And we went to the government and registered officially, get more support. I was able to do a lot of public relations work for them. We got more than 35 nonprofit organizations show up on the opening ceremony and more than 300 attendees. And we fundraised more than $6,000 that day for the organization. So
let me ask you, you must have incredible persuasive skills. What were you saying to them that convinced them? What do they see in you?
I think it's all about how genuine you are. Basically, how people see how dedicated you are to that cause. And my job was really to reach out to a bigger audience and tell them how it feels to be in that situation and how much that is related with them and what they can do to support us. When I talk to them, it's very genuine. I was able to carry out my impact.
You have applied to only one college.
Right.
Wellesley. Why?
When I was reading a biography of Hillary Clinton, I also learned about Madeleine Albright, who are both of them incredibly successful. Also, Bing Xin, who's like amazing poet, and the Song Shi Sanjie, like the Song sisters. They're all alum of Wellesley. And I kind of just have this college in mind for read on time. Women's leadership is important, and I want to be part of this movement. I want to be able to have this opportunity to empower myself more and join this movement to empower more people. And at that time, it just feels like Wellesley is the best fit. I also really enjoy small classroom learning where everyone is supportive and you help each other out and being able to make incredible connection with professors, right? That would really nurture me. So totally went for Wellesley.
When you were 20, you took a gap year from Wellesley and you went to Mexico. You launched a business there. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I've actually never imagined myself running a startup at such a young age. So basically what happened was I joined this competition called Draper Business Competition. And I entered and I actually won the first place.
Wow. What is that about? What is the flavor?
What it does is we connect local home chefs with young professionals in their neighborhood through our platform. Basically, it's to empower women inside communities who, you know, need to take care of their kids and are unemployed and wanted to earn some extra money. They stay in their houses and while cooking for their family, they cook extras and sell their product through our platform.
Looking back on that, what makes that hard?
Actually, the hardest was mostly the learning curve because I was so new in entrepreneurship. Basically, you need to learn everything. How does fundraising work? How do you manage a team? How do you even find your team member at the beginning, right? How do you build a tech product? And I have zero background in tech.
So what was step number one?
I think step number one is definitely about empowering myself to understand how to come up with a good business model. And then it's about, you know, who you're working with. And then how do you execute it? It's execution is totally almost everything about a startup instead of the idea. I learned a lot through this experience.
Did you have mentors? Did you have advisors who influenced you?
Yeah, definitely. I've been so lucky to come across amazing people during this process. Tim Robe, who is the CEO of Cambridge Innovation Center, has been an amazing mentor throughout. He was actually my judge in the business competition. And then went to Draper University. Tim Draper, who is the founder, he's amazing, visionary. He's a VC. Got a lot of support from him.
At what point did you decide that entrepreneurship is for you? Your upbringing, your background put you in a box and you were looking for security.
Yeah. So what I realized is I asked myself, what wakes me up every morning? What is my passion? What do I want to spend my time doing that energizes me? It is definitely not the 8-to-5 life in the cubicle, right? I want to be able to innovate and make a real impact. And I realize entrepreneurship is absolutely the way to go. I'm able to stretch myself so much, challenge myself, push myself out of comfort zone, and just learn and being able to network with amazing people who actually go out and make a real change. So definitely decided that that's the way to go.
And how would you trace the roots of that passion for entrepreneurship? You're 21 years old.
So I think it's definitely a process. Basically, from United World College, I kind of practiced a lot of compassion. I was able to go into the real world, travel around the world, understand what is the underlying reasons for, you know, poverty and lack of resources, and what is my role that I can play in the middle. And then I guess a bunch of opportunities I gotten from Wellesley, Draper University sort of give me the skill set to do things.
What do you tell your family and friends what America is like?
Yeah, wow. It's so interesting because you never really gotten perspectives unless you've been in both countries for some time, right? I think one of the biggest contrasts I've seen between countries is U.S. is a very open-minded place. I guess people here are very open-minded about a lot of things. They are critical on the decisions they make, what the country doing as a whole and their daily lives. And another thing is I think the U.S. really respect the youth or believe in their power of change and give them so much more opportunities than where I was from. Because I think in China, a lot of youth are sort of mistrusted or untrusted. But in the U.S., you're very encouraged to show what you can do. So that I find really powerful.
Mojia, it sounds like your life so far has been this straight, smooth sailing. Have you encountered any headwinds that sort of knock you down and wipe you out?
Definitely. I don't think anyone's life is just smooth and always going up. There are always up and downs. So the recent instance is, when we talk about slavery, right? It actually didn't turn out the way exactly I wanted. Definitely a lot of down times because I was, you know, first time entrepreneur on startups, didn't know Mexico very well, didn't know the market very well. So it was a lot of struggle. Right now we're, you know, thinking of pivoting the business model. So I think went through a lot of hardships and a lot of challenges, times that I was wondering, why am I doing what I'm doing? What can I do better, right? Mm-hmm.
Did you feel all alone? Did you have mentors?
I was very lucky to have mentors, but I think entrepreneurship is a lonely journey, right? You're pretty much alone or, you know, with your team, but, you know, it is always like that.
Yeah.
It was definitely challenging. I don't know if I'm going to succeed or not, right?
Right.
Chances that you're going to fail is way higher than you're going to succeed.
Yeah.
But
you knew that going in.
Absolutely. I know entrepreneurship is very risky. But I had this mentality that if I succeed, I'm going to learn a lot. If I fail, I'm going to learn even more.
Mm.
So why not just go and do it? Because if I don't do it, you will never learn those lessons and you will never know what's the outcome, right?
Yeah.
So you should just go and dive in. That's what I did. And I would never regret a single second that I spent.